Episode 7, please don't argue with facts. It's your boy, Chadwick Do-Right, can't do no wrong. We got Corey Moore here.
It's 7? We at 7?
Yeah, we at 7, man.
Okay, we have a cookie.
Yeah, we climbing that level. We got a special guest in here, man. Comedian.
Yay, yay. I'm in the house. What's happening, man?
The king of the underground comedy.
I am the undisputed king. You gotta put undisputed. If you don't put undisputed, I had a dude go back and change 1,000 flyers. Because he didn't understand. Yeah, I promise you. Undisputed. I'm not the king of underground comedy. I'm the undisputed king.
Okay.
Put some respect on it.
Now, you just got off the road from New Orleans.
Yeah. They love me in New Orleans. Especially when they drunk. I just did a political thing. That my job is so much easier when losers are drunk. Even the dude running, he was coming in and Marty doing a great job. Now here's the deal, he wasn't talking to me. I'm like, I'm over here, sir. He was like, hey, you're doing a great job. Okay. My job becomes too easy when I'm doing a political thing like that. They raise money, and then listen to this. In New Orleans, little small place I was in, I'm talking about the room, probably it was a little bit bigger than where y'all is right now, but they raised $250,000.
$250,000
for his running thing, whatever he's gonna do. It's some political stuff. I don't ask for it. I just look for my money, you know what I'm saying? I don't ask for it. Yeah, I don't got my money. That's all I know. But they had all that.
I'm not gonna run for office.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Get drunk.
Get drunk and then put my
name. Yeah, go talk to the meeting over there when he's standing over here. I'm over here going, great job. And I said, sir, I'm over here. He's like, okay, you're doing great.
Now, Mo, I know you come to Meridian quite often. And I know last time you said you pulled up a Trojan chicken.
I did. Look.
And you saw.
Look, this is what killed me is, if you, listen, I will buy some if I have to, you understand? I don't mind. I got a budget set aside to buy me some if I'm in need. But if you're going to be out there selling, don't bring me your titty, look like it was dead. She was holding, I'm not lying, it would look like a wet sock, and she was like, I need a toothpaste. I said, no, you need some duct tape to tape that thing up. What are you doing?
Two pieces of duct tape?
Yeah, she said, you need 2 pieces of duct tape. She talked, you want, no.
See, you was over in the hood.
Listen, I'm sorry, y'all. I would buy me some. I don't care what nobody says. Listen, anything I want in life, whatever I want, I will buy. I'm not going to buy it. If I do, I'm going to buy it and go bury it. Yeah, give it so I can go bury it.
Let me ask you a question. How long have you been doing comedy?
All my life. Everybody say that, but seriously, all my life. Let me tell y'all a story. I put this on Facebook a few weeks ago. Growing up as a child, I grew up, when I say hard, I mean hard. A lot of people, and I mean, y'all young, y'all don't know nothing about this. I grew up in a house with no running water, no central air, heat, slopping hogs, cows, and all that type of thing, the whole nine. There was time when we went to bed hungry. Our daddy, if he heard me saying what I'm saying right now, he'd be mad because he didn't want nobody to know that because he was too proud.
Right.
But there were times when we actually went to bed hungry because we didn't have. Now, I remember this one time, and this is what I put up on Facebook. Little nappy-headed boy from the dirty South. Mm. I said, he's laying in his bed. You can see the condensation smoke coming from his mouth as his little nose and mouth protrudes from underneath the covers. I said, in the distance, he can hear his sister crying in the next room because she's home. I said, he also can hear his mother crying because she can hear her children crying. Mm. I said, the little nappy-headed boy, he get picked on and messed with at school because he don't have the proper clothes. He learned comedy. Comedy became his shield that protected him from all this ridicule. I said, the little boy said one night in a soft whisper in the bitter cold, he said, this may be where I am, but this ain't where I'm going to be. I said, the little boy made it, because that little boy was me. And on Facebook, they were like, I only put it up because this one lady at the mall when I was passing out flyers to the show, she said, you look a little cocky and arrogant and conceited. I said, wow, how can you judge anybody You judge anybody without knowing them. So I felt the need to tell my story. Mm-hmm. So anybody look at me, they see me flashing now, you see what I'm driving at. Man, I came up, but until you judge, you know, until you know where I come from, don't try to judge me. Step aside, let me tell you my story. Then if you want to judge me, go ahead. But bro, I come up with nothing, man. I came from literally nothing. So now, I don't like hearing a little child say they hungry. Whether they hungry or not, I'm going to feed that child. Don't tell me that they ain't hungry. You don't know. If a little child saying they hungry, feed that child. I know. I ain't been there, man. So comedy, you ask me how long I've been doing comedy? I've been doing comedy all my life. Now professionally, probably since 95, 96, something like that. Yeah. And every time I hear a comedian say, I've never been booed, I'm fascinated. And I'm like, you ain't never been booed, nigga. I go to Atlanta. Bruce is hosting. This is before Bruce blew up. He had a spot down there, and I can't think of the name of it, but it was ghetto. When I say it was ghetto, it was straight ghetto as hell. Mm-hmm. I go on stage, confident as hell. I said, because I'm going to get him. My God, I know this stuff here. They booed me so bad. I was like, look, y'all stop it. I just quit. Let me just finish. After a while, it was, I'm serious. The booze, it formed a cloud. And the cloud just came over here. I just got on the cloud and I just went on out the room. Because they booed me so bad. And I don't understand how no comedian can say that they never been booed. Because it makes you who you are. Because you go back home, you say, okay.
You refine this shit.
Boo me, won't boo me no more. But seriously, now, I'm running a record, probably, I'm going to go ahead and say, probably 7, 8, maybe 10 years strong.
Yeah.
I've never been booed. No, I don't even expect it no more. When I go on stage, I hear some of the young cats saying, man, it's a tough crowd. I'm going to tell y'all a story here when I finish what I'm saying now. Man, it's a tough crowd out there, man. I'm afraid if you hire me to do a show and we're at a gospel concert or something, but you put me in a comedy setting, I'm talking about you just hired me and you put me in a comedy setting, I'm like, shit, okay. Because I'm ready. How does a comedian get nervous when there's a comedy crowd out there? So don't come to me telling me they ain't laugh yet. No, because they ain't heard nothing funny yet, nigga. Give me the mic. I go down to Pensacola. It's either Pensacola or Florida State University. What campus is that?
Gainesville.
I can't remember.
That's the Seminoles.
Yeah, and to be honest with y'all, but anyway, it's not important. But anyway, this is during the heyday of Shucky Ducky and the rest of them.
Shucky Ducky.
Yeah, listen, I'm backstage. I'm headlining. I'm backstage. So the club owner comes to me. He said, "Mo, Shucky Ducky just dropped by. As a headline, I want to ask your permission to let him go up and do 5 minutes and stuff like that." And I was like, okay. I wasn't happy about it because this is my show. As a headliner, this is your show. You don't want all the rest of the niggas went out there and did that, so now it's my turn.
Right.
Shucky Ducky go out there and do about 20 minutes, rip the stage apart. People jumping up, running and stuff. I got on my headsets, but I can still hear the noise and stuff. The club owner comes back. He said, "Mo, if you don't want to go up behind Shucky, I understand." He said, "I understand. I'm still going to get you your money and stuff. We'll bring you back. But Shucky just destroyed this one." I'm sitting there now, a little cocky, but I don't have it. It's a brim. And I look up just enough so he can see my eyes. And I said, "Give me the mic." And I held my head back down. I felt a chill over my body. I go out there, and I want to explain something to y'all. I'm nervous as a comedian if you or you go out in front of me and bomb. Mm-hmm. Because what y'all just did, y'all brought the energy level down. Mm-hmm. Now I'm nervous as hell. Even though I know I'm going to go out and do what I do, but now I got to come back out and not only energize them, but concentrate on doing my show as well.
Right.
But you mean to tell me I'm going to go behind a nigga who just ripped the stage apart? I'm going to kill him. Seriously. They done.
Because they already left.
They
done.
Just got to keep the party going. He hand me the mic. I go out. I do 45 minutes. And I swear to God, they're running up to the stage. giving me high five and stuff like that. I literally destroyed the state, and Shucky Ducky walked up to me and said, nigga, what you did, you went in there and did foreplay for me. You did all the foreplay for me and got her juicy drinks. Yeah. You sitting at the bar, nigga, giving her drink. And then she looked around and smiled at me. I said, yeah.
So you try to tell me you was like Big and Small when who they attracted with that line. Man. So now everybody wild, I creep up from behind.
Yes, sir. Look. You mean to tell me you done got her ready, you got her moist, dripping, and you hand me the mic? I went out there and destroyed
it. But you know, I think it's important that you let everybody know, because everybody look at the success, but you let everybody know that you came from where you came from.
I make sure they know that, because so many people, they see me, when I go there on the stage, I hear this from so many different people. They said, Mo, you literally command the stage. You have to. First of all, I'm no different than a preacher. And I want you to understand what I just said. If I'm on that stage, I've seen so many times, a dude can be on stage, a comedian, and people are getting up, walking around, going to the bathroom, talking amongst themselves. That's no respect. Mm-hmm. Think about it. You know this, in church, when the preacher takes the stand, all eyes on him. Mm-hmm. Even the usher, they'll come over here. Hey, come on. When I'm on that stage, I don't have to ask you that. Because of the way I command the stage, when people get up and start moving, my ex-wife, she learned the hard way. You do not move when I'm on that stage. You don't move. And she was a little bit tipsy. I don't call her name right now. She's going to be married to her. I said, if you don't sit your little narrow, drunk ass down, and everybody is laughing, and I go in and do about 15 minutes something, and people are like, man, you were so brutal on that girl. So they saw me at the end of the show. They said, how can you be with him? And she said, this is my husband. And they were like, I said, ain't nobody off guard. See, but you got to realize, it's an art form to comedy.
Yeah.
Listen to me. If I'm messing with you, if you're in my crowd and I'm messing with you, I'm messing with you as long as you're laughing.
Right.
Because that's only, it's funny to me only when you're laughing. Right. Now, when you stop, I know I done touched the nerve now.
I'm going to back off. I'm
backing off. Number one, I want my ass. You know what I'm saying? I done had a nigga rush the stage, but listen. Here's the deal. As a comedian, you got to be aware of everything. When they rushing that stage, like you can stand there if you want to, because security, half the time, going to be a nigga back there on Social Security. You know what I mean? And then I'm like, hey, dude, trying to get up, man. I got him on the show. No, nigga, move. Because he literally trying to crawl on the stage.
Right.
Yeah, you piss him off. Right. Mexican dude. Ah, I'm up in New York City. They ain't got no sense of humor.
Hey, no, it's tough in New York.
But listen. When them Mexican dudes pull up their pants and start doing this here sideways, look here, they stand up. Hey, homes, yeah, you boy funny inside. I'm like, hey, dude, then ain't that it? No, man, come on with some jokes, man. He holding his pants like, hey, dude, calm down. Unless he can run. Listen, the lady playing on running dude. I had a dude from here, I don't call his name. I take him to Memphis with me to do security. Some mess broke out, and when I swear to God, when I look around, he passed by me. And I'm not lying, but the nigga passed by me right now. I got to catch up with him, and when I get around the corner, I swear, I know I'll call you. I'm looking for him. Now, I swear to y'all, it's a Corvette. He a big dude. He bigger than one of y'all. That nigga up under that Corvette. I said, first of all, how the hell did you get up under him? He come on.
He crawled on the Corvette.
That nigga on the Corvette. He about 400 pounds. How did you get up under here? This is not secure.
Your term is a fantastic on you.
He turned into a stretch man. And he got up under that car and said, dude, that last time worked for me. But he didn't want
it. Let me ask you this. How is it important, like, let's say, I know you're talking about tours and things like that. Yeah. How is it important to freshen your material and the things? Like, do you take care of the business that you are?
I do. Listen, yeah. I did this thing with Donald Trump and what's her name that was standing up behind Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love taking current events and stuff like that because I said, yeah, because that was one of them sisters movies when they like, yeah, nigga. Yeah, mess with me if you want to. Because my family is crazy. Because that's the way Nancy was doing. I don't know if you saw her. But Donald Trump, he knew it too because he was standing there doing his speech and all of a sudden he like, okay, Des, I see you, bitch. She's like, yeah, dog. I'm Italian, and my family is crazy. You mess, I'll cut you like a white boy at a globetrotter tribe. Mess with me, Donald. Cause I'm Donald knew not to mess with Nancy. Nancy collected. Yeah. She connected to the mob. Now, y'all can believe this if you want to or not. Nancy is literally sitting behind Donald, and she making finger motion, hand motion. The women getting out of hand over there when they was, it said the women took over and they done won so many elected, blah, blah, blah. And Nancy said, she did that Malcolm X shit. The motherfucker sat back down and I was like, damn, Nancy got power, man.
Yes, you know.
And serious, when they get, anytime the Democrats got out of hand, she look around like this here. The motherfucker got back quiet. I said, Nancy got power, come on. That power there, man.
Let me ask you, because you said you've been doing comedy for a long time. Was there any comedians growing up that kind of influenced you along the way?
When people ask me this, they don't believe me when I say this. Don Rickles.
Don Rickles.
I think Don Rickles. Don't get me wrong. Richard Pryor. I grew up with him. I love Richard. Yeah. But Don Rickles.
Oh, Don.
White boy. Yeah. White man. He was the absolute best, hands down, at handling a heckle. Mm-hmm. Or just messing with somebody in the crowd. It's an art form to it. I see so many comedians get up and they get harsh and brutal. I'll take an aspect about you that, say for instance, when I did the club around here, I'm going to go ahead and give them a plug, the Cafe 35. Mm-hmm. There was a big dude in the crowd. And I could tell he was a little bit drunk and he was ready to get at it. But I took the fact that he was big and kind of muscular and I took that and used it as my... So you got to realize, whatever I was saying to him wasn't offensive, but it made everybody else laugh.
Yeah.
I'm with this big swole ass thing up.
Yeah, okay.
So now, everything that I'm saying, he even laughing at it.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, that's the type of nigga that is. I said, this nigga here breaking your house. And then... hold you at gunpoint while he's standing up there robbing you, talking to you real nice. I said, look at him, look how big he is. He looked like somebody's uncle. And while I'm sitting there talking at him, everything that I'm saying about him is not offensive, but everybody is laughing. Yeah. See,
well, they can paint that picture.
Yeah, but see, you gotta realize, when you're doing comedy, you ain't there to offend nobody. That man just paid his money to come here and see you. Uh-huh. So why are you as a comedian on that stage doing something to get him that upset? Because, see, my thing is this. A heckler, if he yell out at my show, Lord knows he'll never do it again. But it's for me to sit up there and be on a heckler for 30 or 40 minutes. It makes no sense. I got too much else to talk. I got too much material to talk about. So when you see a comedian, trust me with this. When you see a comedian, he's on stage talking about the audience because he ain't got nothing else. Mm-hmm. He ain't got nothing else in the tank. He ain't got nothing. He ain't got nothing.
Let me ask you this, man. As a comedian... and like creating your sets and doing it, how much of that do you pull from your own life? Like is it all of it, or are you just
90%? And when I say 90%, I tell stories about things that happened to me. That's what makes it so easy. And number one, I do a lot of taboo subjects.
Yeah.
The only reason I do it is because, first of all, it's funny. Secondly, ain't nobody finna mess with that. You know, I do taboo, like. This is something seriously. Every man over 40 years old need to go and have himself checked for rectal cancer. Mm-hmm. Now, when I'm on stage talking about that, it's so funny. It's got you bent over talking about it. But at the same time, too many niggas ain't gonna steal your material because they gotta talk about somebody putting on a glove, reaching up your head. They don't wanna talk about it. So I already know. As funny as my joke was, ain't nobody else gonna touch it. Yeah, because I'm telling you, when the doctor did me, the only thing I didn't like about him, and this is still confusing to me to this day, is why he did tapping my butt, come on, loosen up. No! I'm not gonna have you thinking I'm enjoying. If you don't do it, it's gonna be four. If you're gonna do this, you're gonna take it. I'm not giving you anything. And he's sitting up there talking about, you gotta loosen up. No. And you stop looking at me in my eyes when you talk. You stop looking at me with those baby blue eyes talking to me. I'm serious, man. Nobody else gonna touch that. Nobody. But it's so informative. I had dudes tell me, say, Mo, the shit was so funny you was talking about. Man, I had to go get me a checkup. That made me feel good that through my comedy, I reached that one dude who went and had a self-check because of that. So I'm doing stuff that's so taboo, but it's so funny. I don't have to worry about nobody stealing that material. Ain't nobody know that. Because everybody's so, you know, homophobic these days. And I talk about gay stuff. I don't do it because they didn't number me. Gay people everywhere. You said do the wrong thing. You ain't gonna wear no gun. Gay folk everywhere, and they on the cover with it, man. I ain't know that. I'm telling you, it's gay folk there. But I speak to them. I be like, I ain't gay, man. I don't make a man stuff like that, man. Because number one, they everywhere. Politically, whether you know it or not, gay people everywhere. And see, you know from what I love Empire. You know from watching Empire, they don't look gay no more. They look like regular men. There's some light looking dudes on there, and then. When I saw him kissing one time, and that dude, Lee Daniels, I knew Lee Daniels had to be gay in order to do that scene he did with Jamal Lyon and the other dude. They were, when I said they were butt naked, the only thing you didn't see was they Johnsons. You saw butt naked asses, and I'm like, oh my goodness, Empire, you done went too far. But it was an erotic scene, man, and I'm thinking, oh my God. So with me, I will attack subjects like that because the average man won't. Right. So everybody's so homophobic, and I don't understand. They act like a gay person just gonna walk up to him and rape him. No, you got to be the aggressor, dude. Think about it. You the one got to do everything. So I'm thinking, why are you so homophobic? I'm not. I tackle those subjects.
So like the whole like Me Too movement and things like that, like it put a lot of strain on comics and how they what they can say.
You believe it? It do.
It's coming back full circle, like it's coming back around.
Let me say this much. It's one of the reasons why, and I want you to totally, everybody totally understand what I'm about to say now. It's the reason why I love underground comedy. When I say underground comedy, I'm basically free to say whatever I want to say. Even people like Kevin Hart will say he can. But when you're tied to the ties here, a corporation and stuff like that, no, you can't.
Then you get banned from the Oscars.
Huh?
You end up getting banned from the Oscars.
I will get banned from the Oscars every damn time. Because see, with me, I really speak my mind. And the thing I love about what I do, man, I swear to God, I don't make it kind of like Ricky Smiley, Maybelline. But when I look up and I'm sitting in the same limo with a Kevin Hart or Michael Blackson or Bruce, we all sitting in the same limo. I'm not making the same money, but I'm riding
but
in the
you,
same
that's, a, that's the best feeling like this.
That's a great feeling. Yeah. I'm a little country boy from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Grew up in the deep south. And when I look around, I done been to the Bahamas. I done did the tour over in Japan. It's that military tour where it's raising morale and stuff. Mm. So when people say to me, he's a local comic, I laugh because the radio station is local.
Right.
The TV station is local.
Yeah.
I'm worldwide, baby. I'm worldwide.
Undisputed.
And then, undisputed. And people would think that's a cocky thing to say. No, it's a true statement.
Yeah.
You don't know how to know. I mean, I done been to Canada to that.
You did like the comic reviews and all those things.
Everything. Comic when I say everything, I was one of the first on coming to the stage with Lil JJ, and what people don't realize with Lil JJ, that whole scenario was set up for him to win and become Lil JJ, which it fizzled out.
Yeah,
but listen to this. I go on stage one day. This was during coming to the stage, and they literally then bust in a bunch of high school kids. So when I go out there, my comedy is kind of risque, but at the same time, don't get me wrong, I do church events, I do social events, I just did the play. So I know how to curl them up. And people say, I said, no, Mo is versatile. You tell me the situation you want me into and watch me adjust. I walk out on the stage one time, and this is in a little place in Abbotsville, Alabama. When I walk out there, I'm all prepared to do my Def Jam material. And the lights was on. You know, it was an auditorium, but wasn't dark like it usually be. It was a good thing, because when I walk out there, I even see old women sitting there holding their grandbabies and they, you know, they 7-year-old grandkids and they laugh. And I said, just in that split second,
it's turned off.
And I go to a whole different set. Still get a standing ovation. You got to do that as a comedian. You got to learn how to adjust on the fly. I've had a comedian, I'm serious. I've had a comedian, we backstage, getting ready to do an audition. Somebody go out in front and do some similar material and it got them freaked out. Dude, I got over 3 hours worth of material I can do. Seriously. So when somebody go, even if I was planning on going up doing it, I was like, okay, trying to switch gears.
Yeah.
But this dude who was going up, like, two people behind this dude, he freaking out. Man, that's how I do you. Man, he knew this. Okay, dude, you act like that's all you got in your bag?
Right.
What, you ain't got nothing now?
Gotta have some
memory. Man, I got Uzi. I got hand grenades. Man, I got them hollow heat sneakers. What you paying him for? Mo, he just did one of your jokes. Huh? Let him have it. Give me this bag here. I got nothing over here.
Call of Duty, you got everything.
You just said that, like, you didn't want to. Do you listen to other topics? Do you like? You don't.
And people ask me that. Say, for instance, if I'm headlining a show, I'm backstage with my headset on. So even if that dude went out and did some material that's similar to mine, I don't care. Because number one, I'm finna go out there and I'm finna do mine.
Yeah.
I bet you it wasn't funny as mine.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it, but I bet you it ain't funny as mine.
Yeah.
I don't listen to other comments. People are asking me now, did you see such and such special? Did you see? I don't. Cat Williams, I have never sat down to a Cat Williams.
Wow.
Because Cat Williams, I did a show with him down in Miami too.
Yeah.
And
do you ever go to comedy shows and, like, just watch comedians?
The last time I've been to a comedy show, believe it or not, it was in Fairfield, Alabama, and Ricky Smiley was coming up through the ring. Ricky Smiley has always been one of my favorite comics. That's the last time I've been sat and watched a comedy.
Okay.
And
okay.
That was.
Been a while.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you, Mo, because you say you've been doing comedy and you always knew that comedy was your calling.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the first time where either you was on stage or writing jokes where you was like, this is for me? Like, was there a moment where you said, this is it? When you was on stage and you was like, this is what this is.
I'm going to go back to working over here. I'm going to be a comedian.
I'm going to tell you this. This may sound crazy. I'm in, where is Durham? Is that North Carolina, South Carolina?
North Carolina.
Okay, North Carolina. Me and another fellow comic, Steve Brown, out of Tuscaloosa. This is when I knew I was going to do comedy. We go to Durham. It's pouring down rain. Pouring down rain. We get to the club. There's three people there beside the waiters and waitresses because it was just that bad of a storm that night. So when we get there, the club owner comes up to us. He says, I'm sorry, fellas, this and that. We got people who bought tickets. They just not here because of the storm. What I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and give y'all money and get the driver to take you back to your rooms. And I apologize. I said, no, ain't nothing you can do about the weather and stuff like that. Two females sitting down front watch the transaction when the guy paid us and we get ready to leave. And they said, hey, are y'all the comics? We're heading out the door, me and Steve. I look around, I said, yeah. She said, y'all not gonna perform? I said, sweetie, ain't nobody here. She said, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow. Steve, he said, well, you wanna do something? He said, you can go and do something. I said, Steve said, you go out, you do about 10, 15 minutes, and I'll come out here and do 30. I ended up doing about 40 minutes. Steve did about an hour and 20 minutes. The only three people that was in that place lying, laughing and wiping tears with those three girls down front. It was two sitting directly down front, and there was one kind of sitting adjacent over there. They were literally wiping tears. And I said to myself then, and it's my creed right now, I don't care if it's 2 or 2,000. When I hit that stage, and if anybody has ever seen me perform, they know what I'm saying right now is true. They said, Mo, you electrify stage when you hit it. It's because of what happened that night. I don't care if it's two, you paid your money.
Mm-hmm.
You finna get your money worth when you come see Mo. Mm-hmm. I don't care if ain't nobody else in there. I'm gonna come over to your table, sit down with you, tell the joke. Because you paid your money. Right. Now watch this. That's the night.
See, that's different when you got a crowd of people that can feed off each other.
Yeah.
But when you can have two or three people in there and have them cry.
I got people that then came to me. Mo, I'm going to go on the road with you. I want to do this. They'll get out there. We'll get to the room where put 20 people in there. And they don't do well. Me, I don't care.
Right.
How many out there? Three? Ooh, them three more up and leave him with their belly button. Some of them will pee on themselves. Because that's the energy I take to the stage. You have to watch one of my shows to know what I'm talking about. When I hit the stage, I command it. And from the time I'm there until I leave, you're going to laugh. You're going to laugh. I have to run down and tickle you on your arm. You understand? You're here for laughter. That's what I'm going to give you. Mm. I love this, man. I love this. And when I hear the young comics, I'm like, it's a tough room. I ain't seen no tough room. Because me, I be like, oh, okay, I see y'all want to be tough. I take my mic, put it in the stand, start rolling up my sleeve. I say, yeah. Start stretching. I say, yeah. I got to go to work tonight, y'all. Stuff like that. Now they laughing. All I need to hear one laughter. You know what? Break the laughter loose. Now I got them giggling.
Yeah.
I got you now. Yeah. You sons of bitches, I got you now. Because all I want to do is break the ice. Other comedians don't get that. They sitting up there sweating. They getting dry mouth. No. You gave me a challenge tonight. Like I said, I'm down in Atlanta. Southeast Florida. Cat Williams, he come behind me. I done tore his stage up. Y'all give it up for that nigga Mo. He just came out here and he done tore this motherfucker up. Now, I was not planning on having to do any work tonight. He got on his mink, links, whatever, the coat and stuff. He started taking it off. He said, y'all give it up for that nigga. Because he done made me have to work tonight. He said, Mo, I want you to understand one thing. I am Cat motherfucking Williams. And by the time I'm through with these motherfuckers, they won't even remember your motherfucking name. That when he said it, he was up for mad love because I knew what he was saying wasn't disrespectful. Yeah. It was like,
really,
I gotta give you this.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I'm through with them, they won't even remember your motherfucking name. And I fell out that out backstage, I did. Because that was the greatest compliment I done had since I'm doing it.
Like you've been doing comedy. Have you ever thought about like transitioning to like movies, television?
I'm gonna tell you what I'm
things like that.
I have. But mine is going to be plays, stage plays. I done wrote two stage plays right now. One of them I put on stage. The one I got right now, and I finally got the financial backing from a guy here in Meridian and one out in Houston, Texas. So it will be on stage probably around Christmas. Now, the one thing when people see this play, the one thing they're going to realize that Mo is just not all about jokes. Y'all going to see a powerful play. Don't get me wrong. If y'all are fans of Tyler Perry, that's fine. No. But I don't believe in having to put on a wig and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. That man did his thing. He ready to buy airlines and all that.
Amen.
But I don't feel it necessary for me to do it. Mm-hmm. When y'all see my play, y'all going to see something along the lines of an empire. Mm-hmm. You know, that cat. Sure, it's going to have his comical moments, but it's going to be so powerful, so dramatic. You're going to be like, wait a minute, Mo. Yeah.
See, I think, because I'm in the comics have some of the best minds in the world. Because like you have to be able to see certain things that other people can't see, expose it and make you laugh at it.
That's what I'm saying.
You gotta find the light and the dark. You gotta, like, it's hard
okay.
to turn it off.
In Tuscaloosa, this was some crazy stuff. The girl wanted her baby so bad, she literally went and killed another girl and cut the baby out before the woman stopped breathing. Mm-hmm. Now, when that happened, it probably wasn't 3 weeks later when I went on stage. Now, I was young in the game at the time. It was kind of risque, and everybody who saw me, they was like, man, that was risky, but it was funny as hell. That, when you know that you're a comedian, when you can take something as traumatic as that and go on stage only a few weeks later and still make people laugh, because it was still fresh.
Yeah.
But it was the way I done it.
Yeah. And see, we talked about it a little bit off camera, where you can take tragedies and people's personal pains and make it to a comedic experience for people.
Exactly.
And you told us about in Tuscaloosa when the tornado came through.
That was powerful for me. And when I say it was powerful for me, when I say depression is real, guys, depression is real. I never would have thought somebody like me, so I'm so happy-go-lucky and stuff, I could fall into depression. But after that, I was told it was survivor's remorse because I had schoolmates. I told y'all, the girl that I dated, hot water heater come across the room. It's traveling so fast, they say it was the equivalent of getting hit by a car at 90 miles per hour. If it's any consolation, she didn't feel a thing. Now, I got to walk up to a casket and look down. During that time, I've never been to so many funerals. Caskets this small being brought in. The dad of this little girl, he literally carrying her like this in there. That's too much for me. I'm telling y'all now, I couldn't take it. That's something I get up and leave out the church. I can't do this. Dad, you're a better man than me to bring your daughter in. I couldn't have did it, but he did it. Came up, laid her down so gracefully. That was it for me. I'm like, okay, I turned in the butter. I had to get out of there, man. And after that, I turned down like two or three shows. And after that, I had some people in my ear. They said, Mo, you can't do this. This is what we need. We need you. We need laughter. Our city is torn apart. If you didn't fell down on us, man, you done fell apart on us. What do we have to laugh about? Come on, find the humor in this. Help us, man.
So how did you come up out of that depression?
Comedy.
Comedy?
Talking about the tornado. Like I told you, the first time I did it was up in Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee. I talked about the tornado and how it hit. Standing ovation. And I was still went backstage and held my head down. I said, you just got a standing ovation off your city's tragedy. Still feel bad.
And you're going to feel bad, but I think it's important, and it happens a lot, because life happens to everybody. We all live in the same world, and we see things happen around us. But I think a lot of times we look to comedy to give us a little bit of relief from the real world.
Exactly.
And so we still need people like you and other comedians.
You got to realize, it was a girl, a female friend of mine. She was the one who came to me, and she said, Mo, she said, you give up, what are we going to do? What we gonna do? I said, I can't find myself. I can't get on stage and talk about it. I'm telling y'all, I had a nephew. Newborn, was ripped out of his arms. They found it looked like a little dog lands on my man. And I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't wanna keep talking about this because that time, it was, I couldn't get out of it. I wanted to get on stage and do comedy, but I couldn't find the humor in it. When I finally did, it just exploded because I was like, it was, for me, therapy that I could get up on stage again and talk about this. And the killer part about it, I tell people this story all the time. Show after show, once I started getting my energy back, I could literally see all my friends sitting around a rock. They was in heaven, but they were sitting all on the same rock, just laughing, pointing at me. I was like, okay, I got their approval now. Friends I played basketball with, gotta go up to a casket. I gotta go up to a casket because three brothers are laid there. Daddy and two sons. And I gotta go up there and look at all three of them. I know them, too well. Tuscaloosa was devastating to me. And it put me in a depression.
Yeah.
Depression is real. It's real.
Well, let's get out of depression. Some other depression.
Yeah.
about your, I guess you're a Roll Tide, Crimson Tide.
I love Alabama. I love with the red hot intensity of 7-7. I love me some. So you got to realize, when they lost to Clemson, you got to realize something. I never saw that coming.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I never saw that coming.
I saw it coming.
Oh, yeah.
Listen. I was so happy to see that.
Oh, because you know, like Dallas Cowboys, y'all. I know one of y'all are Dallas Cowboys.
I hate the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, I hate, when I say I hate Dallas, I be wanting to shoot some of my friends. I let them know. Keep on talking. They some arrogant.
Oh, boy. Especially when I wait more than 20 years.
Yeah, look, every year, we're going to win it this year. Y'all don't have a quarterback.
But Alabama fans are pretty arrogant, too.
Yeah. But
you have a history, so you kind of
you can't be a little bit. And you know what? I'm gonna tell you, like I heard a little young white girl say one time, and she was on a YouTube video. Sister, you have to forgive us because we don't know nothing else but women.
See,
you have to forgive us. We don't know anything else.
I can refer about 10 years ago. I went to the Iron Bowl. And Alabama got their ass whooped. I'm in Tuscaloosa. And like, I'm like, it's only been like 10 years. Yeah. Okay.
But I'm going to tell you, two of the hardest losses for Alabama. Cam Newton. Don't let nobody argue different. Well, not only the Cam Newton.
I know what you're about to say.
The missed field goal. And this last one with Clemson. If they tell you any other different. Because number one, we never saw neither one of those coming.
I saw Clemson coming. But yeah. I did not see that missed field goal. That missed field goal.
And let me tell you something that I found out years later. And it made sense once I thought about it. Nick Saban put his jumbo package on the field. Think about everything I'm saying right now. Mm-hmm. He put his jumbo package on the field to make sure nobody blocked the kick. Now, can you imagine if you got a jumbo package on there and that boy got it and started running? Now, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When I heard it, I was like, wow, that's deep. But he put his jumbo package. He took the athletes out. I don't need no athlete. I need somebody to make sure this kick is not blocked.
Yeah. Hey, coach,
I might have to run. You ain't got to run, boo. Yeah, go out there and make sure that this kick is not blocked. So that was their mentality. So when that boy started running, they were like, Nick, what do we do? I don't run in practice. What do you want me to do, man? They don't run. It was a jumbo package. So when that boy started running, you watch them and the guy, they're like, okay, I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to catch him. They 400 pounds.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to catch
him. Once that boy caught him, I'm to the sideline. There was no way to
do it. But did you notice? He was virtually untouched. Yeah. Think about it. The jumbo package was out there. And the jumbo package was, they were trying to run. They looked like they were.
Now, I know you say you're from Tuscaloosa and Alabama, but aside from Alabama, I guess one of the other prides of Tuscaloosa right now is Deontay Wilder.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you something. People ask me, do I know him? I don't know him like personally. I just know that when we used to play basketball, Dante was tall, lanky. When I said tall, lanky, skinny, goofy like. So he used to come out there and he thought it was cool because he could slam. Well, you're 6'8", nigga. You know what you're doing. But other than that, he never showed me anything to say that he'd be what he are right now. Nothing. Because he was so tall, lanky, and goofy. All he could do was slam. As for a shoot, basketball skills, no. Put him down low and he gonna slam. But so when people ask me do I know him personally, well, I can say this much. He has agreed to make a special guest appearance in one of my plays, just so I can put his name on the marquee. So he'll just do a schedule. But when I put it, I'm probably giving away too much. When I say starring Dante Wilder, everybody go around, that would be probably about 5 minutes. I just need a marquee name.
Come here, not somebody else.
Did I miss Dante? Came out saying, ah, he left.
Speaking of which, you got something coming up here in Marina next week, is that correct?
Yeah. It's my funny first Friday. The guy who came to me, local guy down here, Dwayne Davis, good guy. And when I see this guy, he gets up early in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and he starts doing community service. He delivered flowers to teachers, and he just community involved, got to blow up things and always constantly doing stuff for kids. Even over there, he got computers set up. Kids can come in and play computers or do games and stuff like that. He's just a real great community leader, and I love him to death. So when he came to me, I thought it was another one of those situations where, 40, 50 people, I like to call the name in. That's not feasible for me. I don't want none of y'all sitting here thinking that Mo feel like he above that, but if I'm messing with something that it's got to be feasible. I'm too far along to be dealing with something that's going, you got to put all this time and effort in, and you're like, hell, is this it? You know what I'm saying? If I'm doing something now, it's got to be feasible. So when I walk in this place and I look around, I'm just looking because he's like, what do you think? I said, yeah, this can work. Because truly, if you arrange the seating right in there, you get 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's feasible to me. So we went to work right away, and right now we already got people on the contract and deposit 6 months down the road. And some of the names that we got is those recognizable names. Mm-hmm. So I get it with not only Meridian, but everybody. You want that name that you, and other people that have done it. I don't say the reason they failed is because of what I'm doing. This guy here gets it. He's putting the energy and effort and what it takes to do it. Because, you know, even paying me, you know, I was telling him, I said, look, I'm going to have, and then we're going to have to do this, and then you got to get hotel rooms and yada, yada, yada. And he do it. And he said, Mo, we're going to ride it out. He said, I know any business, when you start the first 6 months, so he done already booked everything 6 months in advance. So don't nobody come.
Yeah, it's already booked.
It's already booked.
Okay. But Meridian, they going to turn out for you. I think they're going to turn out for you.
I hope so. Because the thing that surprised me the last show, we did, and my name was the only one on that. Not taking nothing from myself, but I just felt like, okay, let's just test the water. Let's see if they're going to come out to see Mo. And we had a really nice turnout. Mm-hmm. As far as flyers and word of mouth, that's how we did. So we look at Tyler Craig, he BET Comedy View, P. Diddy's Bad Boy. When I tell you this nigga is stupid funny, mm-hmm. Tyler went on stage one time. We did a show down in Montgomery, Alabama. Tyler did a show where he came on stage and talked about this dog that his mama bought, and he put him out in the doghouse. Now, just listening to that, I'm looking at both of y'all. Y'all, what's funny about it? Let him tell the story. I was laughing so hard, and I told him, I said, Tyler, you coming, but you got to tell that doghouse story. Because something as simple as his mama buying a dog, and him having to put it in the doghouse. I'm looking at y'all like, what? Let him tell. I was crying. I was like this here. Oh my God. Tyler is one of my favorite comedians. He's one of those comedians where we as comedians, we sit backstage and be like, wow. Because he dissected my crime.
Yeah.
Just completely dissected. He keeps his flask, and people ask me, do we really drink? I don't know what's in there. But he keep a flask. The more to the story is, and he drinking stuff like, and just rip a cry.
Mm-hmm.
Just rip a cry. So yeah, that's coming May 3rd. And after that, every first Friday, for the next 6 months anyway. After that, we're gonna see how it goes. But we already booked for the next 6 months, and we got some of the bigger names. Plus we got a couple of shows already. Well, we got the Temple Theater booked for 2 big shows where we're bringing in some real recognizable names. I don't want to speak on it right now because one of them is under contract and the other one isn't, but it's going to be great.
Well, I'm glad to get you to come back on here, man, get you to do a regular appearance on
the show. You know, everybody who do interview with me said, Mo, you're one of the easiest guys to interview because I love to talk. You got second of all, when I'm dealing with guys like you, I'm watching y'all true professionals. You know, because I've been on shows, nigga, tell me about that time. You know what I'm saying? But when I'm feeling energy from y'all, if I feel like I'm on stage, you got to realize that's how I perform. Say, for instance, I feel like right now that if I was doing a show and y'all were the only 2 niggas out there, I could still do the show. Yeah. Because it's no different than anything. I want to explain this to y'all. When you go to church, because you go there and say, you know, today I need some fulfillment. I need to get some spiritual guidance. I need some uplifting. Mm-hmm. You have to do the same thing when you go to comedy. You have to say, today, I'm feeling kind of low. Oh, I want to go in. You got to be open for it. Yeah. I'm not going to come out there and beat comedy across your head. Yeah. You got to come in saying, Mo, here I am, an empty vessel. Use me. You know? And that's what I'm going to do on that stage. Yeah. But you have to be a willing participant. This here. I see niggas down front. This thing. I do, where did you come in? Huh? What you mad about, nigga? Your substance they checked and come in? What's wrong with it? But for them to be just sitting down there like this, nigga, I ain't gonna make you laugh. You know, you got to want to. And that's the thing I love about comedy, man. When people are energetic, we tell them all the time, the same energy you give us, we're gonna give it back to you.
I believe life, period. Huh. The same energy you put out, the same energy you get back.
In life itself, just like you just said, If you put out negative energy, that's what you're going to get. But give me that energy y'all got and watch me.
Yeah.
And put it back on.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it to me.
Now let me ask you this too, before we get up out of here. If anybody wants to become a comedian, what are some of the first steps you would tell somebody like into, like becoming one?
It's very easy. I tell you, it's very easy. Get you 3 minutes. 3 minutes may not seem like long, but if you on that stage bomb, yeah, it's like, Lord, get you 3 minutes and build on. Just that simple. It's like building a house. Yeah. I got 3 minutes of material. I went out and I killed with it. Or even if you didn't, now just, okay, what did I do? Find out what jokes work. You're always good to film yourself. What worked? Take those two. It wasn't but two. If you was up there 3 minutes, then two of them, take those two. Throw the rest of it out. Right. Not necessarily throw it out, because I can take jokes that didn't work for another nigga, and I can make it work.
Yeah.
But it's all about the thing I see most young cats do. They get up on stage and talk about what they think that you think is going to be funny. Right. And still talk about, if I talk about my life experience right now, you're going
to
land.
You got to bring them to your world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I tell people, bring them into
your world. And then people see the similarities in their life, and then they laugh at it.
Because I remember this one time, oh my God, I'll never forget it. This girl, she told me, and I know her real well, and I should have known better. She wanted me to take over there to her boyfriend's house. And it was just the way she was sitting. I should have known better. Hurry up. I said, well, what's wrong? Just take me on over there. Look, I'm looking up there. I'm like, you sure you all right? Get her up, mom. Look, when she got out, I swear to y'all, she had on one of them old sundress, floppy sundress.
Mm.
But when she jumped out that car, she pulled out an aluminum bag. Now, I know, the same look you got is like, where the hell did that come from? I don't know if she put out on her arm or between her legs, but that bag came out, she went up there, and she started beating windows out. Mm. Now I'm getting ready to pull off and stuff. Mo, don't you move! And I put it back in park. The dude came out, he had to leave. Mo, what were you thinking? I said, hell, I didn't know. I said, Plymouth Rock landed on us. She destroyed his house and his car with that aluminum bag. And then jump back in my car, come on, let's go. Wow! What's going on? I'm serious. She act like ain't nothing happened. She jumped back and had the aluminum bag between the legs. Come on, now let's go. No, I'm sorry. You got to call Uber or something.
I'm a pretty funny guy on social media. I'm going to see if I can translate that to the stage.
You have to, and listen. This is what I tell people.
Because I got good hair.
Yeah, you got good hair. People ask me, Gallagher, man.
It's about smashing.
Yeah. And people say, how do you fit in with that? I said, well, they sent me that check. Because I've been asked to do country. I love Blake Shelton. So the first time he asked me, oh, man, I love Blake Shelton. So the first time I was asked to, could you open up Blake, host a Blake Shelton?
I was
man, this. I went out and bought me a cowboy hat.
I'm going to tell you about that to the
turned up. I'm on me some skinny jeans and some boots. I come out there playing Old Red. Now, if y'all don't know Old Red, it's an old Blake Shelton song. Go Google Old Red. Oh my God, he talking about how he got in prison. It's a great song. When I say it's a great song, I got in prison and I'm doing 99, killed my wife or something. Anyway, the warden gave him a dog to look after. This is the story. He sent out a letter to his cousin up in Tennessee. He sent down a blue tick hound. She's pretty as she can be. Now, he take Red out there, let him play around with this hound. Then he kept him away for 3 or 4 days. And then when he made his run, they turned Red out. But you know where Red went? Red went where that hound dog was. Blake Shelton got away. That is a great song. So I come out on stage with that with my cowboy hat and stuff like that. And you got to realize something. Black people got way more rhythm than white people. So when I go out there, I go over my hips a few times like that and shoot. He's so cute. He wiggles his hip like Elvis. Hi. I'm Eva. Okay. I'll get with you after the show.
I might need to go to the show.
I love this comedy, man. I'm glad you guys had me on.
We appreciate you coming through, man. I know you're a busy guy, but we sure appreciate having
you. Yeah, and like I say, next Friday, May 3rd, Funny First Friday, we're there the first Friday.
Where is that going
to
be at?
Okay, it's at 1st and 10 Lounge. I'm told that it used to be Levels.
Yeah, Levels.
It's behind Whopper House on
Papa Springs.
Yeah, 493 Papa Springs, something like that.
Everybody knows that.
But right now, we're doing our introduction price is $10. This price will go up, but right now we're trying to get everybody in there to introduce this comedy. Because a comedy ticket like this across the country is going $15, $20, but I said, this is Meridian.
Yeah.
You got the babysitter, you got the slow walk.
Yeah.
So right now, man, that's what we're planning on doing, is doing the $10 ticket right now. Naturally, the VIPs and stuff like that is a little bit higher and stuff, but great show. With me as the host, this is what I want to tell everybody. I'm telling you guys. I had a guy up in Chicago tell me this. He said, Mo, with you as the host, I'm never worried about the show. Mm. With a great host, not just Mo, but any great host, if you got a great host, they can carry the show. Say, for instance, if you got a great host and you got 3 comics on the show, this comic go up in volume, that comic go up in, now that host come in between and he bring the energy back up. It's rough, but if he's a good host, he's going to be able to do it. Now he heads to the headline, now the host can finally take a rest, if the headline is who he say he is. But other than that, if you got a good host, that's why you got a good host.
It's a good way of bringing it back up to talk about the guy that just bombed. That's all.
Yeah, it's too easy because he's sitting backstage like this here.
It's some beautiful ladies out here. It's some beautiful ladies out here.
Dude, they could be rambling when they bombing up there. They be talking. Yeah. Where are my pretty ladies there? So when I come behind, it's just too easy. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the obvious. First of all, it's the elephant in the room. You as a host, you cannot step back. Even if it's a friend of yours, you got to address the elephant in the room. This nigga just bombed. I mean, he bombed miserably. So you got to address it. You can't brush it off.
I heard a comedian say, he said, he was talking about it on another podcast. He was talking, he said, in some club, I think in New York, they used to film the show, right? Mm. So when the guy was bombing, the other comedians would go back there and get in front of the camera like, you're bombing right now. You're bombing.
Now that's cool. That is absolutely cool. Oh my God, that's cool. But that's funny. I'm sorry. I'm picturing that. That's funny. Even though it didn't happen, I'm sorry. That's funny. Yeah, but the thing is, you have to address in comedy. I mean, I'm in North Carolina. I'm on stage. I'm ripping it apart. All of a sudden, I hear this rumble backstage. Now, you got to realize, when you're on stage as a comedian, the light is in your face. So you can't see probably the first row or whatever. So I hear all this rumble. I'm like, the hell? I said, club on security. So finally, about a minute or so go by, Guy runs to the stage and he hands me a note. I'm like, damn. A lady water jet broke. I'm on stage. Her water breaks. She falls to the floor. Water breaks. I said, now, can you imagine? Because the next day, the headlights Moe was sitting in the. And I used it. I said, bring me pregnant ass to my show if you want to. I'm sending you into labor. I'm like, you got to go to no doctor. When did the baby do, Jen? When she go see Moe? That when it do? Because she literally, her water broke. And she was back on the floor, water everywhere. Yeah. Bring that from Moe show again. Come on. The baby won't be here for another 4 weeks. Yeah.
So I'm a pregnant lady.
Yeah. If you sitting up there tired of walking around, come on, my hip rod swole. Come to the show. And I'm gonna relieve you of that baby. I'm gonna relieve you of the baby. Yeah, come to my show.
Well, no, I think we got a lot of money today.
Yeah. And y'all don't do me like they did me on the TV. Yeah. I did an 8-hour interview and they put 12 seconds up there.
Now we're getting the whole hour.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Now, one last question I ask all my guests, I'm going to ask you two before you go. Uh-huh. Are you still down?
Am I still down? Without a man? Oh yeah! I thought you had me about Alabama. Yeah, no doubt. If you cut me right now, I bleed crimson and white. If you cut me right now, you be like, "Yeah, I bleed crimson and white." I love me some Alabama. We'll be back.
Please don't argue with family.